Welcome to the Vegas Business Report, powered by Reliable Environmental Services. Coming up, an inside look at the business of Las Vegas. Stay tuned for interviews with the movers and shakers at the top and on the way up. Plus, Las Vegas sports, entertainment, restaurants, weather, and more. This is the Vegas Business Report, because there's no business like Vegas business. Now, here's Jeff Nathanson and J.J. Snyder.
And welcome to a brand new edition of the Vegas Business Report. Happy Saturday. I'm J.J. Snyder, here with my co-host Jeff Nathanson. It's 11:07, Jeff, and you know what that means.
It means the weekend is underway, and we are ready for what I think will be a premium edition of the program.
We are really lucky to have the gentleman in our studio right now that we do as our guest. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, Jeremy Aguero is here, and you may know his name if you read the newspaper or you watch television or listen to the radio. I call him the most interesting man in the world, the Las Vegas version. That's what I call him. So we'll get to Jeremy in just a second on this Saturday edition of Vegas Business Report. Before we do that, JJ, I want to remind everybody that this portion of the show is brought to you by DBV Solutions. They help businesses adapt, innovate, and thrive. Visit dbvsolutions.com for more. Let's get started right now with today's guest. And I want to frame this up correctly so everybody understands the business conversation. So our first guest and our only guest today went to Valley High School and graduated from there, then went to UNLV, graduated from there with a BS in hotel administration, which for this town is a big deal, right? It's a tourist town, right? Earned his law degree at William Boyd School of Law at UNLV and then co-founded the company Applied Analysis back in 1997. He spent time as chief operations analytics officer with the Las Vegas Raiders, and he is now the principal analyst at Applied Analysis. Jeremy Aguero, welcome. Thank you for being here in studio with us on Vegas Business Report.
I am excited and honored to be here. Thank you. And thank you for the kind introduction.
Well, you're welcome. And I want to, speaking of introductions, I want to go back to the beginning. I want to go to position number one. And that's your career story. It's unique, I think, what you do here in Las Vegas. But can you take us back, Jeremy? Do you remember your first paid job? It may have been when you were young, your first paid job.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, I suppose my very first paid job was being a paper boy.
Right? Okay.
So I did that. I'd go to my grandmother's house. My grandmother's my best friend growing up. I miss her every single day. I'd wrap papers and go do that. I guess, you know, then I worked for the family business a little bit, that kind of stuff. But I guess the first time I had sort of a job was a place called Rockaway Precast. I lasted all of one day. I worked there, and we made like manhole covers and electrical covers and those type of things. And I was there, I think, 7-8 hours, and I didn't get one right. I went home, and I had to cut myself out of my pants because the resin that I had gotten on my pants was so stiff, I couldn't like get out of my pants. So I called them and said, that's it for me. I got to get into college sooner rather than later because I'm not going to survive doing this. And look, I put myself through college busing tables at Bally's Coffee Shop. So those jobs were incredibly important to me and taught me a lot about what I do today.
Sometimes, JJ, we have people that come in and they talk about how those jobs, tough jobs, paperboy is not easy, right? Maybe riding a bike, delivering papers. Sometimes those build character or work-related skills that kind of pop up later in life. Would you say that was the case with the manhole cover job or the paperboy job?
Yeah, look, I mean, certainly the paperboy job, the manhole job is not exactly, you know, my best moment.
Yeah.
But look, it requires responsibility. You have to go and collect and do all those type of things and, you know, get up every morning and work hard and get it done. And yeah, so without a doubt, that's true. I would certainly say that the time I spent bussing tables at Bally's was incredibly instructive. Right? Learning how to hustle, take care of the customer, making sure that, you know, waiter or waitress, you know, that they knew that you were trying hard so that they would tip you out on the way out. Right? I understood how the business worked. The worst day ever, though, was when you had daylight savings time because I was going to school and would have to work the graveyard shift sometimes. And there was nothing worse than them coming in at 2 a.m. and moving the clock back 1 hour manually.
You don't get paid for that, do you?
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
oh, okay.
You do.
You
bet.
And I had a waitress job in college as well. And yeah, those lessons. And also just, I think working for tips, it's invaluable. And it gives you a perspective for the rest of your life that you understand what it is to be in a server or a busser's shoes. It changes your attitude, a lot of people. Yeah, I think for a lot of people.
And I think in this community, it's different than almost anywhere else in the world, right? This is what we do. We are in the customer service business. And I don't care whether you do what I do for a living or you build buildings or you take care of sick people. You're in the customer service business, right? You got to learn how to hustle and make sure that you know who the customer is and you know how to take care of them. And those lessons, exactly what you said, have stuck with me in amazing ways.
During this time period, you know, looking back at your earlier years and your the start of your career, was there a person that was a particular mentor for you?
Hands down. A guy named Shannon Bybee. He was the head of the International Gaming Institute when I was doing my undergraduate coursework at UNLV. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't have a whole lot of direction. I studied all kinds of things. I took a class with Shannon, and he invited me to come up to his office, and we talked for a little while. We became fast friends. He suggested that I come and bring, you know, my schedule to him every semester, and he would pick out all of my classes. He made me take a ridiculous number of classes in economics and finance and, you know, independent study type stuff. And it changed my world altogether.
Wow.
Sort of a sad commentary when probably a year after I graduated, Shannon sat me down and, you know, he and I stayed really close friends, and he told me he was going to pass away. He made me promise him that I would go to law school. He made me promise him I would do that. He said, you're pretty good at the math, but this will make you better. And it's pretty tough when the guy that changed your life tells you this is what you're going to do. And oh, by the way, I'm not going to be around a year from now. So you're going to promise me you're going to do it. It's a promise that I kept.
Wow.
And, you know, that guy was right at every single turn. Look, mentors throughout my entire life, not just Shannon, but certainly including Shannon, it made all the difference in my life. And you know, I've spent an entire career trying to pay it forward.
Unbelievable. That's a great story. I had one when I was a little bit younger where I went to see a guy at Dodger Stadium who was a VP there. And he taught me, Jeremy, the simplest thing. He said, Jeff, everything needs to be one phone call away. And this is a long time ago. And he said, watch this. He calls the guy at the radio station and says, hey, I've got a guy in my office, nice young kid, blah, 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 whatever. He wants to do an internship. And the guy said, yes, send him over. And then he explained to me how the one call away would work. So similar, you know, mentors are critical, you know, for I think in the business world. We want to unpack too the whole applied analysis thing. And in the minute we have in this segment, Jeremy, can you give us an overview of the company and what your company focus is?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're an economic, fiscal, and policy consultancy, which is a very fancy way of saying we use data to help our clients make better decisions. Doesn't matter whether it's a Fortune 500 company or a nonprofit or a government, they all have questions. They all have things they want to get done. And our job is to help them get it done, right? We're the folks that do the heavy lifting. We're there to carry the luggage. And that's what applied analysis is all about.
Amazing. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, more with our special guest, Jeremy Aguero from Applied Analysis. This Saturday edition of the Vegas Business Report rolls on right after this.
Welcome back to the Vegas Business Report, powered by Reliable Environmental Services. Now, back to the business at hand.
And welcome back to the studio. It is a new edition of the Vegas Business Report, and we are focused on Las Vegas and all the data that drives the community, our economy, and our markets. By the way, Jeremy, very important question. Is it data or data?
Either one is correct.
Oh, that makes me so happy because that's what I thought.
Yeah. The big question is it plural or singular? That's what gets everybody completely messed up. But you know what? If anybody gives you a hard time, you just punch them in the face. Both of them are right.
So before the break, we were talking about applied analysis and what your company does. It's definitely, you have your finger on the pulse of the economy here in the Valley. Are there any projects or clients that you're currently working with that you can share with us?
Oh, look, there's lots of things that are going on right now. I mean, we're continuing to work through any number of things. The biggest part, I think, that's happening in the community today is largely surrounding healthcare, right? Everybody is talking about the healthcare. Everybody's talking about we need to have more of it. Where's the expansion? There's a lot of conversation about telehealth today. Those type of things are happening out there. One of the pieces of legislation that that the legislature sort of came together with, and certainly governor was a part of it. Nicole Cannizzaro was a big part of it. Is something that's called SB5, sometimes referred as the Sharp Act. You know, we've all talked about the A's deal or the Tesla deal or the Raiders deal, but nobody really spends a whole lot of time talking about this bill. This bill does the exact same thing that it did for all of those groups, but says if you have a concept to come and help us fill in gaps that we have in the community, the state will provide matching funds.
That's a big deal.
To go get it done. Yeah. And so you have a lot of folks that are out there lining up to say, hey, we know we're a little short on oncology. We know we're short on things like healthcare services. We know we're short on, like, you know, some of the healthcare, particularly women's healthcare, right? That tends to be somewhat underserved, even more so throughout the United States, but more so here. Those type of things, there's some real opportunities for us to grow. And so I'm really excited about that. We're doing all kinds of other things, right? I mean, there's lots of big projects that are coming in, a lot of swirl about the MBA coming in to Las Vegas that everybody wants to talk about, and there's a big part of that. I think there's a lot of just general economics that are out there. I think households continue to feel the pinch of higher prices, and so we're getting a lot of conversations about what are ways that we could take some steps to sort of help alleviate some of those things that are happening. You've got water policy that's out there that's taking a fair amount of our time. The governor created a task force on the corporate ownership of residential housing, so that's been taking quite a bit of time to get through. But JJ, you know, in my world today, I mean, I've got 22 folks that are working for us now, and they're dedicated to all kinds of things that are happening out there. But those are some of the bigger ones that are happening now, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some other ones that are really kind of important. But we've been very lucky to work on just some fantastic things in this community.
I mean, he just mentioned just pretty much the major headlines in the Valley right now.
No, so there's a lot going on. Yeah, on this edition of Vegas Business Report, you are listening to the voice of Jeremy Aguero, the principal analyst at Applied Analysis. And, you know, you talked about your firm is like a data and business advisory firm. And so data is data, your option, is the key driver there. So when you look at that, I can recall it wasn't that long ago that the headlines were about the amount of people that are moving to Nevada, and everybody's going to Nevada, cheaper real estate, you know, no state income tax and all of those things. Where do we stand here in 2026 with that migration from California, from Utah, from Arizona, from other places?
Hey, look, we're still at or near the nation's highest in terms of migration activity, but it's not as much as it used to be. And I think what we're all seeing across the United States is that fertility rates are down. People are having fewer kids. So where we're really seeing it is in retirees. We're seeing a ton of retirees continue to move in. And Jeff, here's a sort of an interesting one. For probably the first 20 years I did what I do for a living, the people that were moving into Southern Nevada were largely coming here for job-related activities. We know that, right? But when they were coming in to Las Vegas, they had an income lower than what the average income was for the people that live here. Over the past 5 years, sort of post-COVID, it's been the opposite of that. What we are seeing is a huge amount of migration, or the majority of migration, is actually people that have higher incomes than the people that are living here. And that's why we're seeing things like, you may have read the article about luxury homes that are going up. We've seen it both North and Southern Nevada overall. And it's also affecting business in a pretty tremendous way, right? Because we're also seeing, you know, a lot of employees still moving in. As a matter of fact, we're number one in the United States here in Southern Nevada relative to job formation. But that population growth is still happening, lower levels, but the demographics of it are changing.
That is very interesting. And I feel like there could be a tie-in with the dynamic on the shift. I mean, we're adapting right now to a shift in tourism, a downward trend, correct? However, people are spending more, the people who are coming. Is that accurate?
JJ, you nailed it. You know, I mean, everybody's super concerned. And I think late last year, there was all this negativity in the market around the fact that tourism was down. Yes, tourism went down. But every year cannot be a peak year, right? I mean, it's impossible, right? And the downturn that we had was significant. I think that there were some real issues surrounding that. I think consumers were concerned. I think Las Vegas made some positioning choices around pricing that turned some people off. And I think that's a problem. And I don't think we can ignore it. But we address those problems and look at what we've seen coming out the other side, right? Two of the last 3 months have been up year over year. I think JJ makes the point that is most important overall. Yes, we may have fewer visitors that are coming, but those visitors that are coming are spending more money than they ever have before in the history of Las Vegas. And let's not forget that 2026 is a pretty strong convention calendar. We just had ConExpo. crushed it relative to that. Look at all the things that the LVCVA is doing to say, hey, we want to bring people here during the 4th of July holidays, everything from, you know, celebrations to fireworks to everything that's going on. I mean, those guys do a remarkable job at that. But look, they can't fix the economy. They can't change the fact that tourism across the United States is showing some signs of instability, because that's what happens when consumers have a little less money than they did before. But considering where we are and considering everything that's happening and considering that we are remarkably dependent, I think the fact that we've stabilized relative to tourism and the fact that exactly what you said, that the spending on that is higher than it has been at any point in history, are things we ought to be pretty proud of here.
Talking with Jeremy Aguero right now, you mentioned hospitality, right? You have a background in hospitality as well. That has been our core industry here in Southern Nevada for a long, long time. Are you starting to see, does the data say there's a bit of a shift into tech companies coming in? And is that something we can kind of like look at over the next 5 years? Is something to feel like excited about?
Yeah, look, they don't just say that we're starting. The data say that we're well on our way to making that shift. You know, obviously a priority of the governor. I think you have to look at what the folks at LVGEA and GOED are doing, which has been pretty darn effective in terms of making the change. But here's the crazy part. Leisure and hospitality has been one of our slowest growing industries for the better part of the past 5-10 years, right? If we look at where we're actually growing, it's healthcare. It's business and professional services. You talked about it. We're seeing technology. Now, technology is not really an industry. Technology sort of permeates everything. I don't think I have a client anymore that isn't a technology company, whether they're a hospital or in construction, they're a technology company these days. But even in areas where we saw some sluggishness, things like construction during the end of last year, we've actually seen those numbers start to pick up overall. Right? We are still over-dependent on the hospitality industry. We still have more than 2 times the number of construction workers that you would think we would have for a community our size. We still have only about 75% of the healthcare economy we should have for a community of our size. But we've made tremendous strides in everything from advanced manufacturing to healthcare to everything else. I mean, there are really cool companies that are moving in to Nevada that are doing remarkable things and they're planting seeds that we're already seeing the benefits of.
JJ, last week on the show, you had mentioned all the talk about Caesars and MGM and how those are changing ownership. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, what about that? So we've been hospitality. Now there's some tech coming in, a lot of sports. I want to get to that in a few minutes as well. What do you make of MGM and Caesars both selling their organizations?
Yeah, look, I'll be honest with you, it makes me a little bit nervous. You know, there's so much about what we do here that is dependent upon the people that are here and making those investments.
Yeah.
You know, the one that I point to probably today more than anything else is Derek Stevens and the way that he's transformed.
At Circa?
Yeah, at Circa, thank you.
Downtown.
I mentioned that. I think his work has been transformative there. I think you see some of the things that Bill Hornbuckle has done at MGM and and they have been also remarkable in terms of what they're doing, right? The fact that people see value and see opportunity in that, I'm very encouraged by. But transition can be hard. And what does it mean? Does it mean more investment? I'm in. Does it mean innovation? I'm in. But does it mean trying to squeeze everything you can out of it?
To pay for it.
That is the biggest challenge that I think Las Vegas has. We lose sight of that customer delivering value, and we lose. And that always makes me nervous. And I want to be very clear. I don't think any of the folks that are out there that are talking about those acquisitions are necessarily saying that. I don't think that's it. But the devil is in the details relative to that. And if you're going to give me innovation and investment and energy like what Derek Stevens is doing, and if you're going to give me a community-mindedness like what Bill Hornbuckle does, thinking about those employees, driving it forward, finding ways to do it better tomorrow than he did yesterday, I'm in 100%. I think that's great. And I think having people interested in us is fantastic, whether it's these massive investors or even these Native American communities that are looking to have a footprint here.
Yes.
I think all of that is good. I think it's good for us. I also think that competition and diversification is critical for the success of our community. And right now, what we're seeing is some properties that have seen not as much investment, other properties that are catering to the high end, and they are diametrically imposed relative to how they're performing. And I think we need to make sure we are mindful of that and we are serving all of it.
Interesting. We are talking with Jeremy Aguero on this edition of the Vegas Business Report. When we come back after this, we're going to dive into a bunch more topics. Since Jeremy is here and he knows so much about our local landscape here, we'll talk a little sports. Some projects like Allegiant Stadium got a lot of pushback at the time. Very profitable, like number one in the country. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. First, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, all of that straight ahead on this edition of the Vegas Business Report.
Welcome back to the Vegas Business Report, powered by Reliable Environmental Services. Now, back to the business at hand.
And we are back on a new edition of Vegas Business Report. Hey, if you miss any of our show, or maybe you want to go back and listen to Jeremy Aguero's interview again, guess what? You can search the Odyssey app and listen live there, or go to our website. It's VegasBusinessReport.com. You can catch up on past episodes. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Vegas Business Report. And also, there's a LinkedIn page, because that's kind of where we roll, right, Jeff?
That's where we roll.
Yep. Well, we are thrilled to have Jeremy Aguero here, principal from Applied Analysis. And Jeremy, okay, great. Let's talk sports. So I don't know how you sum it up. I've been in town 10 years. How do you explain the emergence, the change in Las Vegas that has happened in the last 10 years with sports?
Look, I mean, my immediate reaction is about damn time. Right? That we saw some of these things happen. I mean, everybody told us what we couldn't do, what we can't do, all those type of things. And here we are, right? Mm. Here we are showing the entire world what can happen. I mean, just think about how different the conversations were a decade ago. You know, T-Mobile Arena was open in April of 2026. Transformative for where we are today. You think about the Knights and what they're doing. God bless them. Is tomorrow night? Friday? I forget.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying. You know, I hope they do it. And we have, you know, the Aces, which are multi-time world champions now. The more technical answer to your question is that it has been nothing short of transformative for our economy and for our community. And why is that? The reason for it is that it leverages our tourism-based economy. I will never forget, and Jeff, you mentioned this when you were going out of the last segment, that when we were working on Allegiant Stadium, there was a professor, and he said that Allegiant Stadium was going to be the worst, or was, the worst economic development deal that he had ever seen.
Because of the cost.
Because of the cost and the fact that we were putting $750 million, but also because there was no other stadium anywhere in the United States that had the type of visitation that we were estimating, which was at the time somewhere 23-25% of all butts and seats were going to be visitors, right? And he said that there's just no way, because everywhere else around the United States, those numbers are maybe 3, at best 5%. Mm. Last year, Allegiant Stadium did over 50% of butts and seats being
there,
right? And every one of those visitors, not only are those visitors great for us because they're in hotel rooms, but they also spend more and stay longer than their counterparts in other places, right? It has been amazing for us, right? You mentioned it. One of the best performing centers anywhere, not only in the United States, but, excuse me, but in the world.
Allegiant is.
We came in second in the world for the highest grossing stadium anywhere in the world.
Wow.
And we were second only because Shakira did like 700 concerts in Mexico, right? And if we're going to have this conversation about transformation of the facility and the sports and another reason to bring people here, you cannot leave Sphere out of that conversation.
Right, for sure.
Right? You think about not only what Sphere has been in terms of putting Las Vegas into the focus of all kinds of social related activity, but also its marriage with sports, right? When Formula One cars are going by and people see that, those eyes on the Sphere follow it, that's what hits all the social media pics, right? Formula One, those type of activities, the Raiders, the Aces, the A's and what they're doing today, it's just spectacular in terms of all the economic activity. And when you take something like Formula One and you bring someone like Beyonce and you have her do a photo shoot in Las Vegas around Formula One, it puts us, this community, in the center of the cultural universe. That is a game changer for us. And I will tell you the part that means more to me than anything else is I got a video this morning And that video is showing the first of the spans going across the top of the A's stadium already being done. The first pieces of the roof. And I'll be honest with you, sitting in my office with, you know, tears coming out of my eyes because it's getting done. And all of those construction workers we talk about, those are real families that are putting that together. And I you know, there's nothing that is more gratifying to me because sports is so much more than game day. It's so much more than the Super Bowl. It's all the people that make it happen, all the people that work at those facilities that change it. And I think the folks that changed it probably more than the other in terms of how we view it has got to be UFC, right? You think about what it was when the Lorenzo and Frank Fertitta bought that with Dana White, right? And they say, we're going to bring this thing here. And they bring over Lawrence Epstein. And it wasn't just about the day they had a fight. It was about building that business here. And now right across the street from where we are doing this incredible show today is the Performance Center, where athletes from all over the world come here to get trained and then go back to where they're going to train for those amazing fights. I mean, you think about small things, that one step when Mark Davis had the courage to say, I'm bringing this here. And let's be clear, he put it all on the line to do that. And you have visionaries in this community like Steve Hill that are like, we are going to find a way to get this done, right? This community can do anything, and sports is the best way to demonstrate that.
He's getting me so pumped up on Las Vegas.
Well, you're already here,
wow,
so that's good.
Wow, you're inspiring. It's really awesome.
On that topic, so, and I'm not an economist, and I don't play one on TV, but you are. Allegiant Stadium, I think I read, is actually ahead of schedule in terms of paying off the costs and the debt and the taxpayer and all those things. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's not just ahead, right? The revenue that is being thrown off is not only ahead of making those payments, even including all the events of COVID, right?
Right.
Where
revenues
weren't there. Oof. We didn't have anybody coming in. We had a closed strip. Let's not forget the room tax helps offset that.
Yeah.
Right. But today, Allegiant Stadium and the visitors that come in are generating more than double the amount for the bond payments, which means that our schools are getting that money. Our roads, our police and fire protection are all better off today. They have more income today because Allegiant Stadium is there.
Compelling.
That's just a really important reminder. I think we lose sight of that a lot of times in the conversation. Will it be the same for the A's stadium?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, right now they're doing a tremendous job to get things sold. Right now you've got a facility that's a little bit more expensive, so that's certainly throwing off some additional taxes. And, you know, you got a lot of folks that are working out there. But, again, you got to prove it.
You also have 81 games, mm-hmm. home games for the A's versus, like, the Raiders, right? You know, 8 or 9 home games per year. So that's a different equation. Mm. And don't you think there will be a naming rights partner that is going to offset – I don't know, a couple million dollars a year for the A's stadium? It's going to be the Vegas Business Report stadium. I'm not sure if we're
in the running. I understand you're in the running. Look, the answer to your question is absolutely yes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the A's are a tremendous organization, and I think they did something that demonstrated how committed they are to this community when they hired Mark Bedain to become their president.
Mm.
You want to talk about a guy that's committed to community. You want to talk about a guy that knows how to do it successfully. I don't know how many people know Mark or know who Mark is. He's now the president of the A's, but there is no one that is better. He is a tremendous, and he will see that thing through with every ounce of his ability.
So on a more personal note, if we can, is there a favorite sport that you enjoy watching?
You know what? I love sports across the board. I am a sports fanatic. I am a huge baseball fan. I love football. I cannot get enough of this Wimby kid. And I'm a Knicks fan, just to be clear. But I cannot get enough of this Wimby kid watching him play.
The future for the Spurs and maybe for the NBA.
But I have to tell you, I'm the other side. I love going to watch the Aces or the Aviators play. And when the Olympics are coming on, I'm the guy that cannot stop watching curling. I love every ounce of it. And with the World Cup coming up, First of all, I can't believe how expensive it is to try to go to a World Cup game. Let's just hold that to the side for a moment. But I am super excited about the World Cup. Look, I think sports brings communities together, and I think that's exactly what it done here. My dad is no longer with us, but he was a huge sports fan, and we never had the opportunity to go to a football game together, a baseball game like that, professional game together. And I get to do that with my son and my daughter, and I love every moment of that. And I think sports brings us together as a world and as a community, and I love it.
And there's more coming. You know, we were talking about this last week, JJ. Now we're going to have women's professional hockey in Vegas this season. So this fall, whenever they start the hockey, that's another professional sport. What is amazing, Jeremy, to me is when you look on your phone, what should I do this weekend or tonight or next week? The sports options are vast. And it's across the board. It's seasonal. And when you add in the A's, and maybe NBA potentially, right? But when you add in the A's, now you're going to have something almost every single night for a couple of weeks in the summer. And it's domed, obviously, which, you know, shout out to dome stadiums in the desert, right? love that for sure. But the driver of the economy you're mentioning before, and I think the A's is another example of some sort of like public-private partnership where the owner of the A's is putting up a gajillion dollars. There's some taxes involved. But to your point about Allegiant, they're paying that off quickly. The more games you have with the A's, I think, makes it a little bit easier. And then there'll be a few other periods in the winter where they can do other stuff at that stadium, which is on the strip and easy for everybody to get to.
Yeah, look, I think the way you said it is exactly right. I mean, what you do with these stadiums all year round is a difference maker across the board. I mean, you think we would have had the Taylor Swift concert or the Beyonce concert or the BTS?
We didn't have
concert?
Anyone that could hold 60,000 in those days.
We wouldn't have had any of that.
Yeah.
And the folks that came to the BTS concert, over 90% of them said they would not have come to Las Vegas otherwise but for that concert.
Wow.
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
It's a complete game changer. And you're right. There's lots of stuff. And I don't know that everything is going to be successful. I don't know about lots of talk about Major League Soccer and lots of talk about NBA. And, you know, I've even had people come and talk to me about, like, Major League Cricket. I don't know. Maybe.
In
maybe,
a small arena,
but if you're
going
to do it, you're going to do it here. Mm. Why? Because we have the benefit of almost 40 million visitors getting on a plane or getting in a car and coming here. And when they come here, they want some stuff to do. And it's not one thing. They want to do as much as they can because this is their time to escape and be gone and do all of that. And that is what makes every one of these things additive. Whether it's the Sphere, whether it's Area 15, whether it's Allegiant Stadium, we're giving all kinds of people more activities to do while they're here. And they love it.
Yeah.
More choices for sure. Can we talk NBA as well for a minute? Yeah. Because I'm kind of fascinated with the news media's coverage of the potential NBA stadium sites, because it seems like to me that there are a lot of people kind of saying, hey, this is where the stadium's going to be. Maybe it'll be up by the empty lot by Fountain Blue. Maybe it'll be down across from the South outlets on the south side of the strip. What is going on behind the scenes when we see these different lots, areas kind of being pitched forward as, and they show renderings, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think everybody's super excited and everybody's got some land and everybody would like that stadium to be located on their property, right? There is no doubt about that whatsoever. There's a lot of those different properties that are out there, but I can tell you nothing has been settled yet. There's a lot of dialogue, sort of heavy clouds, but no rain. And that's the exact process I think the NBA is trying to go through. They've hired a firm. They're going to go through a very deliberate process. They want to have the right ownership group. They want to have the right location. They want to have the right opportunity. And all of those things have to come together. There are some locations that I think from our perspective as a community, we would really like to see, right? Because they could anchor an area of the strip that could potentially use it. They could have an area where transportation is a little easier, something along those lines. All of those factors matter. But the reality is there is a lot of talk. As a matter of fact, it's almost an everyday thing in our office these days, but no decisions have been made.
Interesting. So much I can't wait to see, because that kind of completes the whole like circle, you know,
right?
Hockey, basketball, football, baseball, the whole thing. So that's coming up too. This portion of the show, by the way, is being brought to you by Reliable Environmental Services. Precision, speed, and accountability. Call 1-888-545-7182 for a free estimate for your business. We're going to take a time out, JJ and Jeremy. We'll be right back with segment D coming up. Our guest on this edition of the Vegas Business Report is Jeremy Aguero from Applied Analysis. Fascinating conversation continues on Vegas Business Report right after these words.
Welcome back to the Vegas Business Report, powered by Reliable Environmental Services. Now, back to the business at hand.
All right, let's get back into it. We have Jeremy Aguero, Principal of Applied Analysis, here in studio. This is a fascinating conversation for us, celebrating our ninth episode, Jeff, and
That's
what
right.
a great guest to have.
Yeah, fantastic. And, Jeremy, thank you for being here. We always find we love to have people in studio. It's an easier conversation. A lot of shows call in and someone's on a cell phone and they're Henderson.
We're into the human being thing.
We're into the human being. Yeah. Human connection. So thank you for spending your time away from your office and coming here to join us. Jeremy is the principal analyst for Applied Analysis. And so many of the things that you get involved in, you're taking data and data points and you are translating that into outcomes. Bullet points, perhaps, as you mentioned it. So decision makers can have some data to look at and decide like, hey, we've just, looking at this report, this is the way to go, or this is the way to go. How do you take all that data? How do you gather it? And how do you transform it into digestible points for business leaders in Las Vegas?
Well, look, I mean, every project is a little bit different. So I don't know that there's a specific formula that I could tell you. I think it starts with where we started our conversation. It starts with listening. What are they trying to accomplish? And how do we help them get there, right? It is having a team that knows where to get the data, knows how to analyze the data in a responsible and defensible way, and then really understanding that if you have a great analysis but you don't deliver it in an effective way, it's kind of worthless. And I suppose there's one more element to it that's worth mentioning. Sometimes the data don't bear it out. Right. And I think also having the wherewithal, having the capability, having the internal fortitude to tell someone this project isn't going to work.
Like, oh, wow.
This doesn't make sense. Like, this is, you're going to either lose money or it's not going to have the intended impact. And, I would tell you that a lot of the time, that's how some of those questions happen. Now, obviously, if we can stop somebody from doing something that's not a good idea, before we even move forward in an analysis. But sometimes you got to go through the data to say, hey, this segmentation that you're looking at, it's not deep enough to get you what you want to do. I mean, heck, we've all been around long enough to remember the Manhattanization of Las Vegas when everybody wanted to build a condominium and all they had was a pretty rendering and a trailer on a site, right? And almost none of those got built. And it's because the economics didn't make a whole lot of sense. Right? We see some of that start to spur up, in terms of how all this comes out. And so, in today's world, whether it's sports or whether it's data centers, those type of things, there's a lot of dialogue and there's a lot that goes into those analyses. And I will tell you, it is amazing to me how often people misconstrue either the depth of this market or have a misunderstanding about what a project is going to have, either positive or negative from an impact standpoint.
And obviously, JJ, the creation of jobs is a big part, right, of this. If something new, whether it's a baseball team or whatever it is, when it also creates jobs, huge win, right? Multiple revenue sources for many, many people.
Now, what about when you're talking about driverless cars? And one of the biggest criticisms that comes up right away is the loss of jobs in that situation. So there's a few companies. I think one just maybe is looking for approval to add driverless cars in the Valley, one already very prominent on the Las Vegas Strip. Do you have any feeling around this in terms of how it affects these Uber drivers, these Lyft drivers, these taxi drivers? Is this literally taking away jobs?
The answer to that question is it's not today, but it will. And JJ, I'll be honest with you, this is a hard one for me because I've changed my thinking relative to this particular issue. I believe that technology, AI, is going to cure cancer. I also think it's going to lead to a 20% unemployment rate. And we've got to start thinking about how to get ahead on that. I think we're all very aware of the difficulty, particularly young people are having today, finding their way into the workforce. The world is changing just so rapidly. you know, I would say a couple of years ago, if you and I would have had, the three of us would have had this conversation, I would have said, look, you got to let technology continue to evolve, right? Because as technology evolves, we're going to push us forward. Good ideas push out old ideas and all of those type of things. But the speed of that development matters, and the pace at which displacement happens matters. And so from this perspective, I think that two things are important. Number one, I think we have to change our definition of what is economic development, right? Everybody talks about economic development and diversification as though they are the same thing. And I don't think that they are. I think economic diversification is when a new company moves in and they hire some folks and they do something different. I think economic development is the companies that are here continuing to grow and prosper and add employees and do all of those type of things. And those can be very different. I think we have demonstrated our prowess from an economic development standpoint. I think we need to refocus on economic development overall so that we can really make sure that any company that moves into Nevada is making sure that it's better for all the people that are here today. Mm. We think about it in terms of water and employment, but also in terms of things like tax policy. If a business throws off a bunch of taxes to help our schools, but they only employ 15 people, that's pretty good for all of us. And we have to think about that a little bit more dynamically. I also think from a policy perspective, we've got to start thinking 20 years out. We're going to be educating kids differently. We're going to be providing healthcare differently. Our world is changing faster than we are able to see it. And you brought out the first one, JJ. We're seeing it immediately in terms of the displacement of someone like an Uber or a Lyft driver. That concerns me. It doesn't concern me on its face. It doesn't concern me only there, because that technology will change and we want to be able to transition those folks into maybe something that's higher paid or something along those lines. I'm okay with that. But as it continues to transition, the reality is if we are not getting ahead of it, we are just going to be constantly reacting to innovation and technology, and this problem's going to be out there. And so I think we have to change our thinking relative to this.
Have you been in an autonomous vehicle around the strip? Have you taken the ride?
I have, and I
and you're still here.
I said on a previous episode I would like to do it with you. I think even we could broadcast from one. It would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I read the other day in what you're saying, you know, about autonomous vehicles, that even the Tesla tunnels, which are continuing to develop and are super interesting, and I have taken those, at some point way down the road might be autonomous Tesla vehicles too. But right now they have a driver. But what do you think of that in terms of a transit system underneath the convention center, going to other places, getting underneath where all the cars are? Is that viable for us long term?
The answer to that question is yes. I mean, look, the idea that we are going to build wider streets in order to solve our transportation problem is like me trying to solve my weight problem by buying bigger pants.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it just doesn't make any logical sense.
I'm going to put that as a short term solution. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? I mean, look, and if we go underground, it gives us some things. Is this perfect yet? No. I think it's going to be autonomous sooner rather than later. I don't know whether that's 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years. I don't think it really matters. But here's what's happening here. The innovation is happening here, right? Mm. We've got to find a way to utilize that. Now, if it's not perfect in some areas, let's find out how to perfect it. Let's make it work for us. Because if we can make that easier for me to get to work, or those employees that are working on the strip, or God help us, please help people get to the airport easier, those tourists that are here, that's a win for all of us. And look, we're not going to probably build a subway system like the subway system in New York tomorrow. It's not going to work for us. But we are either going to be, you know, tethered to the yoke of convention relative to transportation, or we are going to embrace whatever the future is. And I think the loop and what it offers, I think autonomy and what it offers, are exactly where the future is going.
Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us today on the program. Jeremy Aguero from Applied Analysis, Insights and Commentary and Factoids. Really appreciate you spending the time with us today.
I can't thank you enough for being here. And I think all the reasons that you just laid out, how important it is for us to talk about what's happening in this community and have honest conversations, is why shows like this one matter, and why I really hope that people subscribe, tune in, do whatever they need to do to be able to do it. Because if we're not having the conversation, we're not talking about the things we're doing right, the space gets filled with a bunch of misinformation. So I'm really grateful for exactly what you two are doing here.
Well, we appreciate that, JJ. We'll see you next Saturday. That's going to do it for today's edition. We are out of time. The executive producer of Vegas Business Report is Ben McKee. Today's show produced by Allison Polkenhorn and mixed by Trent Ogle. Next Saturday, we will be right back here at 11 a.m. with another show. For J.J. Snyder, I'm Jeff Nathanson. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we will see you next week.
See you next week, guys.
This has been the Vegas Business Report, powered by Reliable Environmental Services. Today's show was produced by Monarch CX. To visit the official show website, go to VegasBusinessReport.com.